and welcome to Built Modular, a podcast brought to you by Box Modular. I'm your host, Michelle Dawn Mooney, and today we're talking about 2024 year in review and 2025 trends, insights from the Modular Building Institute. We have a great guest to bring on today. Tom Hardiman is Executive Director of the Modular Building Institute. Tom, thank you so much for being with me today.
Hi, Michelle. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we have some exciting things to talk about today. Before we kind of dive in, can I ask you to give us a brief bio if you can, please?
Oh, okay. Let's see. How far back do we want to go? Tom Hardiman, I'm the executive director of MBI, like you said in the intro. I've been in this role for 20 years, and the Modular Building Institute is an international trade association that represents the construction industry, modular construction industry. Prior to that, I got my undergrad and MBA from Marshall University in Huntington, West Virginia. Go Herd. Background in insurance, banking, small business development, and just kind of stumbled into this whole modular construction business about 20 years ago. So it's been great.
So you stumbled in 20 years ago and you stayed. So that's a good thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now they can't get rid of me.
So let's start with more of a good thing. What are some of the biggest highlights for the modular construction industry that you saw in 2024?
Well, I tell you, it seems like the industry is exploding. You know, we have a relatively small staff in Charlottesville, Virginia, but we're seeing growth opportunities, not just across the nation, but globally. We held an event in Brussels just last month and had a great turnout there. And what we're finding is kind of our issues and opportunities are really the same across the world. So international growth has definitely been something that's fairly new for our industry and our association. The demand is just off the charts, and we'll probably get into the reasons in a little bit. But our industry is still relatively small, but our market share has tripled over the last 7 years. So we're definitely on an upward trend.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that demand because it really has been skyrocketing, especially in a few industries like healthcare. We're seeing education and then, of course, housing. So talk about the shifts in demand across sectors and then what drove those changes?
Yeah, great question. 20 years ago when I started, we were a very unknown industry. And in fact, when they hired me, they said, if anyone's ever heard of us, it's bad news. So we have a lot of negative perception to overcome. But really, within the last 6 or 7 years, with COVID right in the middle of that, the perception's really changed. And I think what's driving it is a couple of things. One, there's just a massive demand for housing, affordable, attainable housing. We're millions of units short just in the U.S., let alone globally. And then another big trend is that fewer and fewer young people are entering the construction trades. So as these older seasoned workers, retire, there's just a shortage of skilled labor. You couple a shortage of labor with a high demand for housing, and it just creates a lot of pressure for the industry. And I think a lot of developers and architects and government agencies have said, is there a better or different way to build than the way we've been doing it for the last 100 years? And that's led a lot of them to our doorstep and created just more demand than we can handle right now.
And I want to talk about, you mentioned pressure, and I want to talk about something, pressure in a good way, because we are hearing so much about sustainability and green building practices. But how has that played a role in what you've seen with 2024 projects?
Well, sustainability is one of those benefits of modular construction that, frankly, we don't really tout enough. I think it's a huge benefit. There's much less waste that goes to our landfill when you build this way. You're building in a controlled setting, in a factory. If you've been to any traditional construction site, you see dumpster after dumpster just full of pieces of drywall and bits of two by four, and that all goes to our landfill. In a modular factory, there's very little waste. So it's a huge sustainable advantage. Unfortunately, that's not yet a driver. Everyone talks about it. Everyone says, oh yeah, that's great. And then it gets down to how much does it cost? And that still seems to be, the factor that drives a lot of these projects. I do see that changing, very much so. I think going forward, that's going to play a bigger role, and particularly in any government-funded project. That's a driver for them. And I think the younger generation is just much more tuned in to being environmentally conscious than maybe some of us old folks. So I definitely see that trend. I didn't mean you, I meant me. some of us old folks. But yeah, I think we'll see sustainability play a much larger role in the future of construction.
You briefly touched on some pain points there, but let's talk about, you know, it's not all butterflies and roses. Any specific challenges or obstacles the industry faced in 2024? I mean, you talked about less people going into the construction business. There's labor shortages, supply chain shortages, regulatory issues. Can you give us more information there?
Yes, all the above. There's still so much misunderstanding about our industry. It's different. We're building a little differently than the way people are used to, the way code officials and government agencies are used to. So we've had a couple of big regulatory and legislative issues that we had to defeat in 2024. One of them was in Massachusetts, where they rewrote the regulations for our industry. And perhaps not knowing enough about how our industry operates, they wrote the rules anyway. And it would have just absolutely devastated our industry at the same time where Massachusetts has massive housing needs. So we were able to get our members to call and write letters, and they understood and kind of rolled back on some of those proposed regulations. Big win. That's a big win for the industry. Usually the government doesn't change its mind and say, okay, that's too many regulations, let's take some of those back. But that's exactly what happened in Massachusetts. Same thing in Pennsylvania. They wanted to, there was a bill to impose prevailing wage rates, and for lack of, you know, for folks that don't understand that, basically union wages back into our factories based on the trades. That would have had a very inflationary, to say the least, impact on our industry. That went right down to the last day of the Pennsylvania legislature, and we were able to get that one kind of nixed as well. So two big wins in Massachusetts and PA to make sure our industry wasn't further hurt by regulations. So those are the two that kind of come to mind. But we had a lot of wins in 2024 too that were not so much beating negative bills, but, you know, moving the industry forward as well.
Yeah. So I know for a fact, it's pretty much not going out on a limb, but things have changed drastically, I'm sure you would say, in the course of 20 years with how things are done and the technology that is used. So let's talk about that, the advancements that are impacting the industry, new tools, new technologies, and how they're used.
Yeah, you know, our industry, we're a little bit of a hybrid. We're a little bit like construction, we're a little bit like manufacturing, and I think that's maybe what confuses a lot of people. Is they're not sure how to pigeonhole us. We have some companies that are much further along the scale in terms of manufacturing and automation and innovation. Companies that are using robotics to help create modular panels and assemblies. And then we have some companies that are really using some basic assembly line techniques and working in teams. At the end of the day, it's all more efficient than building on site, even if you're building without the technology and automation, just in assembly line, controlled setting. So we're kind of an in-betweener right now. It's kind of an exciting time, Michelle, because we're right at the front end of seeing the construction industry change, like right before our very eyes. So you see 3D printing, you see robots in the factories, and it's all happening now. And we'll look back in 20 years and say, oh my gosh, remember the way we used to build? That was crazy. What were we thinking?
Did you observe any major shifts in customer demands or client expectations in this past year?
I don't know if there are major shifts, but there is still this perception for some reason that modular is going to be cheaper. And that is not always the case. And we rarely say that because, you know, there's so many variables that go into the cost of a construction project, labor, materials, location, so forth. It's more efficient. But we're still trying to overcome that. Well, site built bids were too high, let's try modular and see if we can get it cheaper. Those projects generally don't work out too well for anybody. So I think just a better educated public is the shift we're starting to see. Developers and architects in particular, 5 years ago, we had virtually no members that were developers or architects. Now we have 50 developer firms that are members. an over 60 architect firm. So that alone is changing, you know, our DNA, getting a more educated end user. So I think that's the trend we're seeing, is our message is starting to get out there and our customers understand the benefits a little better, instead of trying to sell them on this idea of, you know, building offsite.
What trends or dynamics would you say surprised you the most in 2024?
When COVID hit, we thought things were going to slow down a little bit. It has been nonstop since COVID. I don't even know that I've had time to step back and catch my breath and say, what are the trends that are happening? It's just everything is happening so rapidly. Canada launched a rapid housing initiative and kind of tagged our industry to help build. The trends we're seeing is the government agencies are calling us. We used to spend marketing money and try to lobby them and get, they're calling us saying, how can we build more houses? Great example, FEMA, you know, after the Maui wildfires in Hawaii, they did not want to replace those homes with HUD code manufactured housing, mobile homes. They wanted code compliant modular homes that looked and met the feel of the community there. So we worked with them and were able to get, you know, they need 2,000 homes. That's hard to do in the best case scenario, let alone when you have people that are, you know, desperately needing housing. So our industry just sent, they're being set now, the first wave of 130 modular homes to Maui. Hopefully those people will be in before Christmas, but there's 2,000 more to build. But that's a huge difference when the government agencies start calling us saying, we understand it. We know there's advantages there. Who can we call? It's like, oh, wow. You know, we've said for years, this is a great idea. This concept is great. I can sell it all day long. But now everyone's kind of wanting to know more. It's not so much about what are the advantages. It's more so now, how do I do this? Who do I call? Getting a little more practical questions.
I love that you shared that too, because I really think hearing the why of all of this, right? Because you know what it is that you produce, but you know, saying that there are families there that might have a house before Christmas is, right, is pretty amazing to think about. So let me ask you this, as far as 2025 is concerned, what emerging trends do you anticipate shaping the modular construction industry?
I think, you know, over the past couple of years, we've seen new factories come online to try to meet some of this demand. Several of them seem to be smaller kind of boutique factories that are building maybe for their region. We just visited one in Pittsburgh recently. They're not huge operations. They're not highly automated. They're not shipping all across the country. They're small factories building for Pittsburgh, hiring Pittsburgh workers. So I think that model is really appealing to a lot of government agencies and jurisdictions. Is let's hire local people to build housing for our community. You know, create good paying jobs, build housing. That's a great model, and we're starting to see some government agencies and economic development authorities at the state and city levels put money into those ideas. You know, how do we create jobs and housing with one package? So we're seeing more and more of that, which is really exciting. We literally, before we got on this call, we had someone in here from Missouri saying, we've got land, we've got government money, we want to create a modular hub with factories to build housing. I think more and more people are going to go down this path of how do we create our own regional hub to build housing and put people to work.
We briefly touched on this before with regards to sustainability and eco-friendly design. How do you see that evolving in 2025?
I think it's going to be, well, sometimes there's politics involved in some of these decisions at the federal and state level, but I think that is going to play a bigger role. We are so wasteful as an industry, the construction industry as a whole. It's just so wasteful and inefficient that any marginal improvement is going to have a massive impact. And I think more people are just going to open their eyes to the fact that, you know, this lack of productivity, building things the way we've always built them, the mountains and mountains of waste that we just send to the landfill, it's it's obscene, really. So I think that is going to play a bigger role. Just if nothing else, the material you're wasting is money. It costs money, and you're throwing it in the landfill. So I just think there'll be a more attention given to not just the amount of waste, but the overall efficiency of a modular process.
And as you said, you expect to see that kind of, grow.
Yeah, I do. I think that will continue to be a bigger driver than it has been in the past.
So on the heels of that, and taking into consideration many other factors that are involved here, what advancements in technology and automation should the industry be prepared for in the coming year?
Well, I do think we have some supplier members. I think a lot of our innovation is going to come from our supplier and vendor side that are selling products into the factories. The types of materials are more sustainable. We have companies that are consultants and providing services on how to automate your factory. So it's the factories are, some of these factories are 20, 30, 40 years old, and they get a little stuck in their ways at times too. So to have an outside vendor or consultant come in and say, if you laid things out this way, we could be more efficient with your workers, save more money, less waste. But we are starting to see more vendors along the lines of robotics and automation and how to improve efficiency in our factories. And we kind of joke, we're more efficient than the site built world. And sometimes we're not even trying that hard. It's like, what if we really tried to be more efficient? How much more efficient? I think there's tremendous upside in our factories in terms of efficiency and sustainability. So again, that's exciting for me. It's we've got a lot of upside, I think. And then one thing we rarely talk about in terms of sustainability is a lot of our companies, including Box Modular, they're building these modular offices or classrooms. They can be picked up and moved and reused and repurposed a second and a third and a fourth and a fifth time. So these temporary relocatable buildings are like the most sustainable thing ever. You're reusing a building. I mean, no other industry that I know of does that.
Yeah. You touched on the situation in Hawaii, which, of course, a natural disaster came into play there in such tragic circumstances. But as a whole, we are having issues with the housing crisis. So where do you see the modular construction field playing a role in 2025 when it comes to the big picture there?
Yeah, that's a huge, hugely important question. I'm not even going to suggest that we can solve the housing crisis. I see those types of articles all the time. We cannot by ourselves. We should be a tool in every government's toolkit. We could be a bigger part of the solution, but we're certainly not the only answer. I think it's an all of the above approach. Manufactured housing, much needed. Tiny homes, modified shipping containers, modular, panelized, all of the above. The housing need is there. And then you look at what happened in, Maui and more recently, North Carolina. There's just no way we can do all this without a more coordinated, more automated process, more industrialized process, I should say. And it's wherever that leads us, it just has to happen. We have fewer workers and higher needs. We have to industrialize this process to a greater degree than we have in the past.
What regions or sectors do you anticipate experiencing the most growth in modular construction in 2025? Because we've seen the need obviously is there on so many levels, but from healthcare to education to overall housing, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, we, 5 or 6 years ago, multifamily was not a big market for our industry. Now it is the largest market for our industry. And speaking in terms of the buildings that are coming out of the factory, the modules, probably about a fourth, 25% are for multifamily projects across North America. And I think that'll continue given all the housing issues we've talked about. But I really think healthcare in particular is on the rise. If you look at these mega hospital projects, you start looking at what parts of that hospital can be built offsite in either a bathroom pod or a head wall for the hospitals. There's a lot of components that could be prefabricated for the healthcare industry, and more of these healthcare authorities are looking in that direction. So I think healthcare, one thing that COVID really highlighted was really, frankly, how unprepared we were in terms of housing and healthcare infrastructure. So I think those two markets are going to be strong. The education industry has always been a strong market for our industry. So healthcare, education, hospitality is another one. You know, hotels, our members are building a lot of hotels. That cooled down quite a bit during COVID, but you know that's coming back as well. So I'm the spokesperson for the industry, so I'm going to say good things, but I'm very bullish on the industry. There's no way it's going to shrink in size. It's only going to grow because once people figure it out, they're not going to go back to building the way they used to build.
I'm going to round things out here with a two-part question as we're looking ahead to 2025. First off, what do you see as the biggest opportunities for modular construction in the next 5 years? And then I'm going to play devil's advocate a bit with a follow-up. What challenges or hurdles do you think the industry will need to overcome in the near future? Because it's going to be a balancing act, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to start with the negative one first so I can end with the positive one. I think a big challenge for us is still this overcoming status quo. That's been the biggest barrier for our industry. The construction industry, by and large, is made up of a bunch of people that look like me, 50-year-old white dudes. I've been doing it for 30 years. Don't tell me there's a new, better way to build. I don't want to hear it. Give me 5 more years and I'm gone, and then you all can do whatever you want. That has to change. The other big piece of that challenge is organized labor. Our business model doesn't exactly align well with how the trades are set up, their business model. You know, they're very specific about each trade does its own thing and each trade has its own union. That doesn't work in a factory when you're building in teams on assembly lines. You can't have, oh, you're a carpenter right now, but you walked across the floor and now you're a laborer. You know, it's just impossible. So our message has always been, you know, you can build 100% of 100 projects, or you can have 50% of 1,000 projects. You know, we need to make the pie bigger for everyone. There's plenty of work for everybody, but we just need to figure out how to get beyond that status quo and those barriers that we've put up ourselves, thinking, you know, that's not good for me or that's not good for the unions or whoever. But so overcoming that status quo is going to be the biggest challenge. Biggest opportunity, it is wide, wide open. I mean, everywhere. Everyone needs housing. Everyone would love to have a factory in their town that employs people in a manufacturing setting. But our infrastructure needs are really pretty significant just in the U.S. We talked about education and healthcare and housing. That's enough to keep people busy for the next 5 years. At one point, we talked to the folks at Marriott, and they told us how many hotels they wanted to build. And said, you're going to need 10 factories just to build for you. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's just the opportunities are just, I think we could be 20% of the market share instead of, you know, 6 or 7%. But we need more factories. We need more incentives from government to say, this is the way to go. Let's put some skin in the game. Let's attract some more manufacturers to open and start addressing these problems.
I'm going to throw one more question in there. How important, based on what you just said, in getting to the best of the aspects in the industry, are partnerships and aligning yourself with the people that can work together? As you said, you could do X amount, 100%, but then you have the ability to do so much more if you're working with the right entities. Can you tell us more about your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, we're still a small trade association. You know, we have 650 members across the world. So we're not some powerhouse DC lobbying firm that can just, you know, walk in and make changes. We have to partner with people. We work regularly with the International Code Council on developing building code language. The word modular is not in the building code. So it's silent on it. So we have to meet the codes, but it leaves a lot of questions to code officials who don't understand it. You know, where is this in the code? It's not in the code. So we're going to put it in the code. So partnering with groups like that and, you know, AIA on the architects and developers, where we spent a lot of time and resources is talking with government agencies at the federal and state level on just how their rules and regulations might be limiting or preventing us from meeting some of their needs and getting them to tweak some of their roles. That's, I think, a big opportunity for us. If we can open up some states to be more accepting or friendly to alternative construction, I think that really would open the floodgates.
Tom Hardiman, Executive Director of the Modular Building Institute. Tom, thank you so much for your time today. If people want to learn more, they want resources, where can they go?
They can go to modular.org, where we have tons of free resources on that page, or email me. My email's on the page. We do have a big World of Modular conference coming up in April at the Bellagio Resort in Las Vegas. Probably about 2,000 people will get there, all modular, all fun. So check us out there too.
That's going to be your tagline, all modular, all fun.
All day.
I love it. Thank you so much, Tom. And thank you for joining us and tuning in to the Built Modular podcast brought to you by Box Modular. And of course, we have that contact information in our show notes as well. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Michelle Dawn Mooney. We hope to connect with you on another podcast soon.